J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
The lyric, it tells a good story. I'll give you that. It tells a good story, but it's not really a lyric as much as a limerick. John at the bar is a friend of mine. He gets him my drinks for free. He's quick with the joke at a light of your smoke, but there's somebody said he'd rather be. I'll show you what happens. I walk into a place and there's a piano bar guy. He sees me. What does he do? He starts playing Piano Man. Okay, here's what happens. Now, even if he's never played the song before, it's pretty easy to figure out. It doesn't hit the guy until he's into the song for a bit. It doesn't go anywhere. He goes... Thank God there's that little release part. And then it starts to hit him. And about that time, our eyes meet and I went... I had this brainstorm. I said, look, I have this musical idea. We got the session booked. I don't have any lyrics written for this thing. Why don't we go in and just try to cut the track without lyrics? And let's just see how we come about it. Now, Liberty doesn't have words to know where he is. So Liberty's going to make up his own lyrics as we're going along. Right? I got Liberty in my headphones, and he doesn't have a voice mic. So Liberty's singing to himself, and I'm hearing... And I hear, sodomy, such a manly word, and I'm buggering you. Sod, and I realize I really got to come up with words very fast. This is a major seven. Now, if you play enough chords like that, it starts to sound like almost every standard. And they still put a buck in the brandy glass, you know. You realize after a certain hour, they were so blitzed, they didn't know what the hell I was playing. And I would say, sure, and I would just play a lot of major sevens.
Well, thank you very much, Nitro.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest as jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Tuesday, May 3rd, 2022, 198. Days remaining in our American democratic system as we have known it. How you doing, kids? It's JC here at jcontheline.com. All right. I don't know how we're going to get everything in here today. We're not going to get everything in, or I'm going to be gone for like 2.5 hours. Let's just start randomly. How come they can't find an escaped convict who is 6'9"? That would stand out anywhere. So how come they can't find 6'9"? And then he's got the prison guard with him, or maybe not. See, up until I found out that she filed her papers for retirement the day before these two took off, it sounded like, well, you know, maybe there's a possibility that he duped her and that he kidnapped her And that's how this whole thing played out. But then why did she retire the day before? She's obviously in on it with him. And there have been stories like this before. I mean, The Executioner's Song was a movie done, oh my God, must be 40, 50 years ago with Gary Gilmore. It was out in Utah, I believe. And I still remember that Rosanna Arquette played his girlfriend in that whole thing. But, you know, you hear these stories all the time about people who are in prison for having committed heinous crimes, and they got pen pals, and there's guys who get married in prison. How disappointed does a woman have to be with the dating scene to finally just say, I think I'll start looking at prisons? Maybe if you're a woman and you're a rotten cook, you figure, well, if the guy ever gets out, he is still going to think he's eating gourmet dining with me after eating prison food for 20 years. That's the only thing I can come up with. Michael A. Taylor. It was just so interesting because Jim Edmonds was doing the color commentary on the baseball game yesterday afternoon, and this guy goes out there and makes a Jim Edmonds-style catch and takes a home run away from Adam Kisner. And by the way, you know, they moved up that game. It was supposed to be a 3 o'clock game. They started at 12:15 yesterday. And if you were there, you know, the rain started almost on the last pitch. In fact, as the players were coming off the field, you could see Mike Claiborne standing there in front of the dugout getting ready to do a post-game interview, and he's holding an umbrella. So that's how they got that game in yesterday. Randy Naughton from Fox 2 is retiring in July. Randy came to St. Louis almost about the same time that I did, and from the same place, Buffalo, New York. I'm from Chicago originally, but I was working in Buffalo back in the early 80s. I know Randy was sensitive about it for a while. Now I don't think she is anymore, otherwise I wouldn't mention it. But she used to work at the Playboy Club. She was a Playboy bunny. There, I got a picture of her in her Playboy bunny outfit. And she worked at the Playboy Club as a young woman. And she somehow met up with a guy who was playing for the Buffalo Bisons, which was the, I think it was the double A team for the Chicago White Sox, the minor league team. And they played at War Memorial Stadium, where OJ had all of his great games. And these two met, ended up moving to St. Louis. Randy broke into the business here in St. Louis as a sportscaster, and then segued over to news and has been on the Fox 2 morning show for, geez, it seems like 100 years. And she'll be checking out of that gig, like I said, in late July. I had it on my list of things to talk about yesterday, and I forgot the premiere episode of Welcome Home, Nikki Glaser. Now, first of all, I think that what she's doing on stage in comedy is pretty fucking brilliant. You know, it's really, really, really filthy and graphic, but it wouldn't be funny unless the jokes were there, and the jokes are there. So even though the material is pretty, I don't know, the word is filthy. It's just really, really bordering on gynecological from time to time. So when she's on stage, she's been marvelous. And, you know, it just seems like everybody wants a piece of her these days. And there's a little backstory on this whole thing, because, as you know, she grew up in Kirkwood. Her father was a guy by the name of E.J. Glaser. And E.J. Glaser was one of the executives at Charter Cable. And in fact, we dealt with him. I think we were at the River. Remember that radio station at 101.1 The River? And Karen Kelly actually worked for E.J. Glaser, because after that gig went away, Karen figured, okay, this radio thing is being too weird. I'm going to get myself a regular job, quote unquote, a regular job. And so she went to work for E.J. Glaser at Charter Cable. So we've known E.J. for a long time. That's her dad. A great guy, by the way. But I watched the show. They did a double episode on Sunday night on E! And, you know, the whole thing just reminded me of how much I really despise reality TV. And all of the shows look exactly the same. You know, she's going to the dentist. She's hanging out with her old boyfriend. And it just wasn't what I was expecting. I was very, very disappointed by the whole thing. The way we heard the story initially was that she had moved back to St. Louis and, you know, during COVID, and was writing a situation comedy about moving back in with her parents. And that I would have probably liked a lot more, but I just cannot stand these reality shows. You know, when your agent comes along and says, you know, we got the show for you, and this is going to be great too, because it's going to let people know more about the real Nikki Glaser, and this will make people like you even more. This show made me like her even less, because she comes off as being a little ditzy, and I don't think she is ditzy, but, you know, this is what happens when you sign up for a reality TV show. James Corden, as you know, just a couple of days ago, stepped down or announced that he was stepping down after a year from his late night show. The rumor now is that he is going to replace Ellen DeGeneres and that he'll do a syndicated afternoon show. So we'll see if that pans out. I've been fearful of this, but we lost another three storm chasers over the weekend. Three college kids down in Oklahoma were storm chasing. And they were killed, not by the tornado, but by the subsequent heavy rain that came down. And I guess they were driving along on one of the interstates, and the rain was coming down in buckets. They hydroplaned, the car went out of control, and then they got broadsided by a semi. All three of them were killed. Even experienced storm chasers run into problems. Down in, it was either Texas or Oklahoma, maybe about 7-8 years ago, pretty much the same thing happened. A couple of storm chasers were driving along, and, you know, again, you're getting, you know, sometimes 2-3 inches of rain an hour in some of these unbelievable supercells, and these guys ended up drowning somehow. So this storm chasing thing, you know, this is what happens now. In the Midwest, you get a tornado, and instead of going down into your basement and getting under the pool table, people go outside with their cell phone and try to get video because they think they're going to get money for it or something, or fame or fortune. I don't really know. You see a tornado, get the hell out of the way of the damn tornado before you get killed, you know, because when the thing starts churning away there, you know, people aren't killed by wind. People are killed by debris, and anything that the tornado picks up that's going 150 miles an hour will go right through your temple and out the other side. It's like being shot in the head. And this is what happens. This is one of the problems with social media and the internet, is that people see stuff and they go, that looks like fun, and they don't know what the hell they're doing. And, you know, again, they weren't killed by the tornado, but by the subsequent heavy rainfall. And you get hydroplaning and the car goes off the road, bang, you get T-boned, and that's the end of that. Sad story. There was a woman on the radio yesterday that I was listening to, because I wanted to hear, I was on that radio station because I wanted to hear the top of the hour newscast. And, you know, you're just sort of driving along and the newscast is over and the next radio show starts. And this woman was sounding like somebody had just run over her dog. Very, very sad sounding beginning to the show. You are taught in the radio business that when that music hits and they cue you and the microphone turns on, you sound like, hey, everybody, how you doing? Good morning, good afternoon. Hi, whoa, we got a great show for you today. And this one was like, oh, I'm like, I wonder what the hell happened. And she was obviously talking about some sort of death. And it sounded like it was intensely personal. And she's just sort of moping along there. And then finally identified the reason for her sadness, the death of Naomi Judd. Right. Deeply affected by that, huh? I was in Target yesterday, and a guy walks past me, and he's like one of these super fit guys, you know, with a very tall, lean wife, little kid, the whole thing. But this guy, you know, looked like he spent most of his days in the gym. And he's wearing a T-shirt that says Rogan/Haynes 2024. Joe Rogan, now apparently a presidential candidate, according to this guy. If he wasn't so big, I probably would have said something to him, but that's what we want to do now in this country. We want to put celebrities in the White House instead of people who have experience in politics, foreign policy, have been elected to at least one political office somewhere along the line. I know I'm making outrageous demands of our politicians. Yeah. What we want to do, put Joe Rogan in the White House along with his buddy Haynes. I can't remember what the guy's first name is. Let's just say Ed. Ed. I have no idea what the guy's first name is, but apparently he's a guy who appears on Joe Rogan's podcast. And I looked him up, and he's a bow hunter and some sort of nutritionist or something. That's actually not a bad idea. I don't know if you remember this, but back in the early 1960s, after Stan Musial retired from baseball, they made him a special presidential envoy or something. He was like the chairman of the physical fitness program in the United States, tried to get the fat kids off the couch, because that's what a nine-year-old responds to, a retired baseball player. Also, when I was in Target, somebody wearing an official Target t-shirt, somebody who, you know, obviously was working there, was some sort of trans person. And I don't make fun of those people, because in my view, I think they got enough problems. But this one was interesting. She had jet black hair, but then one side of her head was bleach blonde. So she had two tones of hair. All right. She was wearing shorts and had a tremendous amount of leg hair. And then when she turned around and I got a good look at her face, she had a mustache. And I'm not talking about just some hair over her lip. I'm talking about a fucking Mark Spitz special. Where do you go with that? I mean, where do you go with that? Dating, to me, seems complicated enough. Now, you're out there looking like that, and I wouldn't even know. I don't know anything. I'm just moving on from that one. We got a baseball pitcher down at the University of Tennessee. His name is Ben Joyce. He's a junior, and they clocked him at 105.5 miles an hour. Fastest pitch ever recorded in college baseball. Second fastest in all of baseball. You may recall Aroldis Chapman, who pitched for Miami and then the Cubs in their World Series year in 2006, has the record at 105.8. DeAndre Hopkins, Arizona Cardinals, suspended 6 games for violating the league's PED policy. So I'm out cutting the grass the other day, listening to the very tail end of the Cardinal game. Yeah, it was on Sunday. So the game was over about, I don't know, 5:36, 6:37, somewhere in there. I lost track, and you're out there, and you're just raking leaves, and you're cutting the grass and doing all that stuff. You sort of lose track of the time. So the baseball game ended, and, you know, I got my headphones in, and they cut at the end of the game, in the post-game show, they cut to a show, which apparently airs on the weekend over there, and it's some Second Amendment show, and it's hosted by three people I know. Number one, Carl the intern, he produces the show for them, and then Mark Cox, who spent years on Channel 4 and segued over to the radio side, replaced Jamie Allman on 97.1 FM. And Mark and I, we worked together for a long time, but Mark and I have issues right now. I'll just sort of leave it at that. And then the third person was a gal by the name of Annie Fry. Now, she's one of the 97.1 talk show hosts, extreme right wing. I met her for the first time over Christmas. I was at a party, and she was there. And I saw her, and I was like, oh, I know who that is. I walked up to her, and I identified myself. I think she was surprised that I was interested in meeting her. I was taken by how pretty she is. She's a very, very pretty girl. She is not tiny. And I don't mean she's fat or anything like that, because she's not. But she is I guess she was sort of tall and, you know, like I said, not dainty. Looks like she could sort of, you know, take care of herself. But like I said, very pretty. Unfortunately, she has the disease, shall we say, and nothing really comes out of her mouth that isn't extreme right wing. But she was very pleasant, and I made a subsequent comment on social media a couple of weeks after that, and she was very appreciative of that. So I don't know why, probably just morbid curiosity. I figure I'll just listen to a little of this. I'm pushing a lot more, and I figure I'll just hear what they got to say. And they started the show with a clip that I'm going to play for you right now. And I want you to hear this, and then I'll have some comments here in a minute. So here is the Second Amendment show that aired on KMOX after the ball game on Sunday. And she is recounting the time that a couple of years ago, she was in downtown St. Louis. She was 7.5 months pregnant, and she needed gas. So she went to that gas station that's over by the White Castle, just south of the stadium. I guess it's on Broadway or near Broadway. And she got carjacked. And she picks up the story there.
In another scenario, I might not have been as lucky as I was to walk away unscathed. I lost my car, I lost everything that was in it. But I had my life, my baby's life. And honestly, my baby saved my life because I'm a little precocious from time to time and maybe a little irrational in the moment.
No, we never see that around here.
No.
Ever.
I keep that off
the air. Thank you. We appreciate that.
That's only my private life, or if I'm being carjacked. But I was 7.5 months pregnant and it was April, and I had the windows down. It was like one of the first beautiful April spring days. So I had the car windows down on the driver's side and on the passenger side, and the fuel tank was on the passenger side. So I was fueling up over there, and the guy jumped in my car from the other side. I leaned into the passenger side. I was screaming at him to get out of my car, which is stupid because I was like halfway in the car yelling at him, and he drove away. He didn't attack me or pull me in. He could have. And in what seemed like an enormous amount of time, but was probably a grand total of maybe 12 to 15 seconds, I realized there was another man in the car that pulled up on the other side of the tank, of the pump, I should say. So there was another party here that could push me in or could hurt me or something. And he could drive off and I'd be half in, and I'm pregnant. I've got a life growing inside of me. I had to back off. And I think that might have kept me from going too far in that moment. That's why for me, it's important that I can protect myself, because there are too many people out there who have zero value for life. I value my life. I valued at the time the life that was growing inside of me. I value the lives of my family, and I will happily use that gun if that means that I protect myself and the people in my life.
And so I think you'll agree, quite a compelling story right there. But let's just think about it for 30 seconds. What Annie was spewing out there was incredibly effective rhetoric. But like I said, when you think about it for 30 seconds, you might come up with a different analysis of the whole thing. First of all, what are you doing getting out of your car, especially 7.5 months pregnant? What are you doing getting out of your car in downtown St. Louis, especially at that gas station? That gas station has no attendant, by the way. You think there might be a reason for that? And you might say, well, you know, but I'm kissing E and I got to go over to Illinois. I don't even know if I'll make it over to the Poplar Street Bridge. Well, then that's poor planning. Okay, so you got to think about those things. But so first mistake is a 7.5 month woman, a person, a human being getting out of their car in that part of town. Now let's talk about that handgun. And by the way, she mentioned subsequently, you know, later on in the show that she just bought 4 new guns. Which is, you know, fine, I guess. If you want all those guns, go ahead. I'm not anti-gun. I just think that there's a lot of people who have guns that maybe don't need them and don't need people building up arsenals. And so it's like, what are you doing? And if you're a collector, it's fine. I don't want your gun. And trust me, if I lived in a part of town where the police don't even show up anymore when you call 911, I'd have a gun. If I lived out in the country where some, you know, drifter could just walk into my bedroom in the middle of the night, yeah, I'd have a gun. I don't have one. I don't need one. And one of the reasons why is statistics. And I don't care who you are. I don't care what political party you belong to. If you look at the statistics, if you got a gun in your house, you are exponentially more likely to be a victim of violence, gun violence. And oftentimes, that gun violence, that gun that you got for quote-unquote protection, you use in an unlawful manner. That's not my opinion. That's what the statistics show, and they have consistently shown that for decades. But let's go back to Annie's scenario. And I don't dislike Annie. I'm not picking on her. I'm just, you know, I have an issue with her argument here. And the question becomes, unless you get out of the car in downtown St. Louis, 7.5 months pregnant, with that pistol in your hand while you're filling up, a gun isn't going to help you. Chances are, in 99.999999% of the cases, even if you got a concealed carry thing, you don't have that gun literally on you. It's in the car somewhere, maybe in the glove compartment. This is one of the big problems with all the break-ins of cars in downtown St. Louis. The people who are breaking into the cars are looking for guns, and a lot of the illegal guns, quote-unquote illegal guns, that are out on the street are guns that were stolen from cars broken into, like at Cardinal baseball games. Again, not my opinion. There are certain things that are intrinsically true. There are facts. Okay? I know we don't pay a lot of attention to facts anymore, but I do. So unless Annie gets out of the car with her gun in her hand, she could have 20 guns, but they're not going to help her because she, by her own admission, the whole thing was over in, you know, 15 seconds. So that question becomes, let's just say she's got a holster. She's got a concealed carry. She's got a holster, and she's 7.5 months pregnant wearing a holster. Okay, you know, maybe. She gets out of the car. She starts pumping gas. Guy comes along and tries to carjack her. She draws her gun and starts shooting in downtown St. Louis. What if I'm walking from the ballpark to the parking garage and a stray bullet goes through my head? You know, I got rights too. What if I'm in a passing car just going up and down Broadway there and now there's bullets flying? Annie, are you suggesting that you become involved in a gunfight in downtown St. Louis, especially when you're 7.5 months pregnant? You see, the whole argument starts to break apart a little bit. Actually, not a little bit. It breaks up completely. But again, as we have pointed out on numerous occasions, what's going on here in the political discourse of this country is lying through omission. You just leave out the parts that don't support your position on a particular issue. And you can't tell me that what people are suggesting is to just be walking around with guns and somebody does something unlawful and you start shooting and there's bullets flying through the air of downtown St. Louis. What about the other woman who's 7.5 months pregnant, who just is in a car going by while all this is going on and you start shooting? She's got rights too. And again, oh, JC, anti-gun, big liberal. It's got nothing to do with guns. It's got to do with safety. It's got to do with practicality. Just trying to keep it real, folks. Just trying to keep it real. You hear me say it all the time. We only do politics on the podcast when it is absolutely unavoidable. And today is one of those days because that story was relevant. And I was just having this conversation yesterday. Very good friend of mine, known him since the mid-70s. We go way back in the radio business, as a matter of fact. And, you know, he identifies as an independent, but he leans right. And he said something that, you know, a lot of people will remember who were around up until about 1980. Because we had this discussion with Tim Russert when we had him on the air a couple of times. He was like, people don't understand why the two sides just can't get together and talk things out. It's really hard to do that when you got people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Ted Cruz and, you know, people like that who are just shouting at each other and it's just try to get some points on the board and Lauren Boebert and people like that. And there's people on the Democratic side there. I don't think they're quite as bad, but they're part of the problem too. But, you know, what he was saying was a lot echoing the sentiments, I think, of a lot of Americans. It's like, look, we got two political parties here. It used to work back in the days of Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan, and you know, these guys would get drunk together after work, and they knew the names of each other's kids, and they knew the wives and the families would get together. And these guys, there was a human quality to their relationship. Well, now, as Jimmy Carter said, we're no longer living in a functioning democracy. The two sides want nothing to do with one another. It's sort of like when you're a hostage in a bank heist, okay? The bank robbers come in. You happen to be in the bank at the same time. You're a hostage, okay? Your chances of survival are pretty good until or unless they come by with the pillowcase or the bag, the burlap sack, and put it over your head. Once you have been dehumanized, then your chances of survival go way down. And that's what we got right now. We got the equivalent of what the paper chase, Professor Kingsfield. Is that his name? Kingsfield? I think so. You've been shrouded. You've been shrouded. You don't count anymore. You're no longer human. And that's what we got going right now. And so, of course, overnight, the big story it broke last night and just sending absolute shockwaves, again, through the political discourse in this country. Sam Alito, Supreme Court Justice, apparently drew this thing up that looks like the Roe v. Wade thing is going to be shot down. And people immediately began to react. And there's no way I'm getting into this discussion. I don't need any more people hating me. Take your hostility out on a dead comedian. Let's bring in George Carlin.
Well, let's get back to this abortion shit. Now, is a fetus a human being? This seems to be the central question. Well, if a fetus is a human being, how come the census doesn't count them? If a fetus is a human being, how come when there's a miscarriage, they don't have a funeral? If a fetus is a human being, how come people say we have two children and one on the way instead of saying we have three children? People say life begins at conception. I say life began about a billion years ago, and it's a continuous process. Continuous, just keeps rolling along. Rolling, rolling, rolling along. Listen, you can go back further than that. What about the carbon atoms? Huh? Human life could not exist without carbon. So is it just possible that maybe we shouldn't be burning all this coal? Just looking for a little consistency here in these anti-abortion arguments. See, the really hardcore people will tell you life begins at fertilization. Fertilization when the sperm fertilizes the egg, which is usually a few moments after the man says, gee, honey, I was gonna pull out, but the phone rang and it startled me. But even after the egg is fertilized, it's still 6 or 7 days before it reaches the uterus and pregnancy begins. And not every egg makes it that far. 80% of a woman's fertilized eggs are rinsed and flushed out of her body once a month during those delightful few days she has. They wind up on sanitary napkins, and yet they are fertilized eggs. So basically what these anti-abortion people are telling us is that any woman who's had more than one period is a serial killer. Consistency. Consistency. Hey, if they really want to get serious, what about all the sperm that are wasted when the state executes a condemned man and one of these pro-life guys who's watching comes in his pants, huh? Here's a guy standing over there with his jockey shorts full of little Vinnies and Debbies, and nobody's saying a word to that guy. Not every ejaculation deserves a name. Catholics and other Christians are against abortions, and they're against homosexuals. Well, who has less abortions than homosexuals? Leave these fucking people alone, for Christ's sakes. Here is an entire class of people guaranteed never to have an abortion. And the Catholics and Christians are just tossing them aside. You'd think they'd make natural allies. And speaking of my friends, the Catholics, when John Cardinal O'Connor of New York and some of these other cardinals and bishops have experienced their first pregnancies and their first labor pains and they've raised a couple of children on a minimum wage, then I'll be glad to hear what they have to say about abortion. I'm sure it'll be interesting. Enlightening, too. But. So you know what I tell these anti-abortion people? I say, hey. If you think a fetus is more important than a woman, try getting a fetus to wash the shit stains out of your underwear. For no pay and no pension. I tell them, think of an abortion as term limits. That's all it is. Biological term limits. But you know, the longer you listen to this abortion debate, the more you hear this phrase, sanctity of life. You've heard that, sanctity of life. You believe in it? Personally, I think it's a bunch of shit. Well, I mean, life is sacred? Who said so? God? Hey, if you read history, you realize that God is one of the leading causes of death. Has been for thousands of years. Hindus, Muslims, Jews, Christians, all taking turns killing each other because God told them it was a good idea. The sword of God, the blood of the Lamb, vengeance is mine. Millions of dead motherfuckers. Millions of dead motherfuckers, all because they gave the wrong answer to the God question. You believe in God? No. Dead. You believe in God? Yes. You believe in my God? No. Dead. My God has a bigger dick than your God. Thousands of years, and all the best wars, too, the bloodiest, most brutal wars fought, all based on religious hatred, which is fine with me, eh? Anytime a bunch of holy people want to kill each other, I'm a happy guy. But don't be giving me all this shit about the sanctity of life. I mean, even if there were such a thing, I don't think it's something you can blame on God. Now, you know where the sanctity of life came from? We made it up. You know why? Because we're alive. Self-interest. Living people have a strong interest in promoting the idea that somehow life is sacred. You don't see Abbott and Costello running around talking about this shit, do you? We're not hearing a whole lot from Mussolini on the subject. What's the latest from JFK? Not a goddamn thing. Because JFK, Mussolini, and Abbott and Costello are fucking dead. They're fucking dead. And dead people give less than a shit about the sanctity of life. Only living people care about it, so the whole thing grows out of a completely biased point of view. It's a self-serving, man-made bullshit story. It's one of these things we tell ourselves so we'll feel noble. Life is sacred. Makes you feel noble. But let me ask you this. If everything that ever lived is dead, and everything alive is gonna die, where does the sacred part come in? I'm having trouble with that. Because, I mean, even with this stuff we preach about the sanctity of life, we don't practice it. We don't practice it. Look at what we kill. Mosquitoes and flies, because they're pests. Lions and tigers, because it's fun. Chickens and pigs, because we're hungry. Pheasants and quails, because it's fun. And we're hungry. And people, we kill people, because they're pests. And it's fun. And you might have noticed something else. The sanctity of life doesn't seem to apply to cancer cells, does it? You rarely see a bumper sticker that says, save the tumors. Or I break for advanced melanoma. Ah, viruses, mold, mildew, maggots, fungus, weeds, E. coli bacteria, the crabs. Nothing sacred about those things. So at best, the sanctity of life is kind of a selective thing. We get to choose which forms of life we feel are sacred, and we get to kill the rest. Pretty neat deal, huh? You know how we got it? We made the whole fucking thing up!
Oh, my God. And you know he's right on top of the whole thing. All right, that's it. The J.C. Corcoran Podcast. For Tuesday, May 3rd, 2022, 198 days remaining in our American democratic system as we have known it. One final note, happy 29th birthday to my lovely daughter, Addison Corcoran. Happy birthday, sweetie. Hope to see you soon. And in the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.